16-year-old champion. He's an Olympian, has never lost a fight. He's had everything and his brother thrown at him, and he continues to succeed. I'm talking about Bitcoin as a 16-year-old super athlete that is competing with guys that are 50, 60, and 70 years old. This is not even a contest. How would you bet against this pony? The hospital goes black, dark, people die.
The only other person this happened with was Jeff Booth.
We're high energy people. This is what I don't understand though, Stacey. Why are you guys competing with Bitcoin? You're gonna get your faces ripped off. You're not gonna win that battle. You're going up against King Kong. The enemy is the legacy market.
I would feel bad being a financial planner. It feels like you're just selling junk.
I've never used a financial advisor in my life. I mean, if he's gonna be my advisor, maybe he should be like a baller. Someone suggested that I should be in bonds, and I'm like, are you fucking people crazy? You just want to have a slow death. And I'm like, my God, dude, I have found my home. I think people should quit talking about Bitcoin as a savings program. It is an industry, my friends. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to have you here.
Good to be here, Stacey.
Yeah, so I want to know about all your work that you've done. You've been in the energy markets and seeing where you came from and how you understand Bitcoin. And I just want to hear more about your journey.
Yeah, well, it's been a fascinating one, that's for sure. I studied economics and marketing in college, tiny little college in Lake Charles, Louisiana. As soon as I graduated, I don't think I put the cape on or the little hat. I literally left town, got an interview, called my sister, said, look, give me an interview if you could just with anyone. Like, my dad died when I was, I think, 9, and I had nobody to give me any instructions. Had this degree, which I probably was a C student on a good day. And I got some interviews in Houston. I got a job within 2 weeks. I moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, and I became a natural gas buyer for a large pipeline. The pipeline was empty, completely empty, 2 billion cubic feet a day. 21-year-old kid who thought gas pipelines were built above the ground. And I literally lucked into a really great role. And then a year and a half later, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, which basically manages all of the energy constructs in the United States. The Reagan administration was in process, and he said, hey, look, it's time to deregulate all the energy companies. They've had a monopoly too long. So this would begin my career of moving into constructs that were undergoing monopoly constructs that were undergoing either deregulatory risk or intervention, economic intervention or technological intervention. And all of this has now happened 40 years later. We've had all these groups of people who have become, I mean, quite frankly, I don't think America is a country where we have free markets. We have not. It is a myth that we have free markets. We have markets in payments, energy, banking, social media, TV, controlled by no less than no more than 4 companies, and usually 2 companies really control 60% of all the deal flow. In the case of Visa, MasterCard, they're 72% of every plastic credit card that touches the United States market or European market. Visa, MasterCard touch it. These normally are not really good constructs that create innovation, competition, and what 300 or 400 men from outside the energy market, and literally down to 300 or 400 men, did in the energy sector under that deregulatory process really sets a awesome metric for how all markets should evolve in a free market, competitive, innovative environment. Natural gas prices are half of what they were when I started. Electricity prices have not gone up except in places like Germany. They've gone up 400% since those pipelines were blown up. And now you'll start to understand. My thesis is that he who has the most energy in the grossest volume, I mean, like, it doesn't really matter price. price is awesome, but he who has the most dense energy wins the game.
Right.
Always.
And you came from that sector and you saw the whole like monopoly and the regulations and everything that was going on. And coming from that world and then seeing Bitcoin as energy now, the connection is massive, you know, so you could see that the why Bitcoin's energy is important, how it can transform the world. So it's like you have a lot of insight coming from that area of work that you came from to see how Bitcoin can change and why Bitcoin's energy usage is important and how it could shape, you know, the world around it.
Yeah, I think understanding how energy moves, how relative it is to determining whether we're a first, second, third world nation. If we could reconstruct the way markets worked in energy, where electricity trades on a 30-minute cycle and natural gas trades on a 30-day cycle, ExxonMobil and all the pipelines said, hey, we will not be able to attract the capital if we're all selling 30-minute and 30-day cycles in natural gas. The truth is we have gone from 10 billion cubic feet a day in the United States in 1985 to 108 billion cubic feet a day, the largest LNG exporter on the planet. And we did that in a 30-day market. There are no long-term 10-year contracts with escalators going up forever and ever, guaranteeing a return. This market works extremely well. If you can do this on energy where the hospital goes black, dark, people die.
Hold on 1 second. Let's pause. The only other person this happened with was Jeff Booth. And of course it happens with you and Jeff Booth where my lights start flickering. So I don't know how that's possible.
We're high energy people.
Yeah, I guess it's like you're sucking the energy, right? Like it's like not sucking it, but just like it's so much.
That would be the right term. I don't take offense to it.
I mean, what are the odds of that? That's insane. So what were you talking about? Do you remember what you were saying?
Well, once you understand, having an understanding of the energy sector really deeply, one, look, 23% or so of all the energy on this planet is trapped behind the pipe. So when I saw Bitcoin, I was like, wow, the applications here. When people think about, hey, you're putting energy into energy, they don't really understand what you're talking about, really. I mean, I understand it when Jeff says that. I understand it when Saylor says it. But most people don't understand that it costs 30 cents a month to store natural gas. Now, natural gas is $3. 10 months, you would have literally paid $3 to store natural gas. So if the price in the wintertime is $6 and the price in the summer is $3, okay, you're going to break even. And people do this all the time. There's storage facilities all over the world. I bought one for $800 million in the UK. Imagine now a producer like ExxonMobil doesn't have to store its natural gas in a cavern held by Williams Energy, a third party. They could take their gas in the summertime and mine Bitcoin. But ExxonMobil is very comfortable with commodity risk, as are their shareholders, with commodities sitting on their balance sheet. They don't hedge them. Their shareholders do not want them to hedge their product. They can hedge through other mechanisms. The storage players sooner or later are going to look at this and go, hey, I either need to become a Bitcoin miner, or the producer who's buying and renting services to store energy, or is going to bury that energy into a wallet, and they can move it anywhere they want. They're not subject to, oh, I'm storing gas in the Marcellus Shale, and then I'm going to sell it in the Marcellus Shale. How about store natural gas in the Marcellus Shale and move it to wherever the hell you want to, whether that's Texas or an LLC in Europe or whatever. Isn't that a better use of funding? And you get to pick and choose your time of exiting that energy storage play. You're not like constantly going, oh, I'm paying 30 cents a month. I got to get out of this trade, right? So there's just, look, Bitcoin is the ultimate arbitrage. And that's why Bitcoin seems to bring in all these different topics like energy, payments, time. Very few people talk about the time value of Bitcoin. Well, I think it's the bee's knees of characteristics for Bitcoin. Yeah. Once people really, really understand what the value of time is, which we don't value time very well as human beings.
Yeah, that whole saying, time is money. Everyone knows that saying, but nobody really thinks about what time actually is and what money actually is. And the fact that your time's stolen from you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And we're going to discover a lot about what that means in the future, I think.
We're just figuring out what it really is. I mean, there's just so many things it touches on in our lives. Do you feel like it's hard to describe Bitcoin to people that you talk to that are in finance and tech? And do people understand it? Is it hard for you to get through to them?
Most people don't really like edgy new ideas. They stay away from it. And this is one of the reasons why Bitcoin's a really good entry point here, because you need to understand that less than 2% of the entire planet has touched any of this. So the way I try to explain it to some of my wealthier friends who are in industries that are very comfortable with, for instance, real estate. Hey, real estate's $330 trillion. Bitcoin's $2 trillion. Now, neither one of these business industries are going to fail. $2 trillion industry does not fail, never in history. It's critical mass. Once you get such momentum, you don't fail. So Bitcoin is beyond failure at this point. And my thesis is that $2 trillion can grow double, triple, quadruple, 10x, much easier than $330 trillion can do anything. In fact, I think 330 could probably contract, but it doesn't need to contract. Okay? All that has to happen, none of these industries have to get hurt. The money doesn't have to come sucking out of Bitcoin. I don't think out of bonds and pensions and moving into Bitcoin. Most likely what will happen, if I'm correct, I think all the wealthy people on this planet have literally maxed out their consumption and investment in villas, pensions, equities, bonds, oil, silver, gold, mistresses, oats. That's, look, if, I don't care how rich you are, you get to a point where you can only wear so many Rolex watches. And you're like, sure. Okay, I don't need any more of those. So what do they need? There's 3,500 billionaires on this planet.
Wow.
$4.5 billion is the average. 100 Bitcoin right now costs how much? 10 million.
Seriously.
They will do $100 million is their first entry. Mm-hmm. Because if they lose the 100 million, they might do a billion. If they lose 100 million, it does not change their life. It's just one big 650 jet, right? They replace these every 3 or 4 years. So I don't think people really understand. There's probably only 20 serious billionaires in Bitcoin out of the 3,500, and they're maxed out. How many Rolexes, how many Richard Mille's can you wear at one time?
Yeah.
Like, I've got Rolexes sitting in, like, somebody's just going to walk in here one day, and I don't even value them anymore, really.
Yeah. I just watched this TV show. I think it was called Your Friends and Neighbors with John Hamm, and he actually lost his job and he became a thief, and he lived in this very expensive neighborhood because everyone around him did the same work he did, and he just started going to his friends' houses and taking a watch here and there and selling them, just, and nobody even knew the difference. You know, that's exactly what you're talking about. People just have so much they wouldn't even know it's missing.
That's a very tiny market, right? That's just one section of super wealth. That's not corporates, that's not family offices worth $300 million. It's not family offices worth $800 million that's in the farming business. There is a tremendous, we're talking about less than 2%. 16-year-old champion. This kid has not lost a sports battle. He's an Olympian, has never lost a fight, and he has been knocked down, abused, thwarted. He's had everything and his brother thrown at him. And he continues to succeed. I'm talking about Bitcoin as a 16-year-old super athlete that is competing with guys that are 50, 60, and 70 years old. This is not even a contest.
How, I think of that too.
How would you bet against this pony?
Right. Okay?
A Saudi Arabian guy that buys a, you know, very well-bred stallions, they have none of these metrics. Okay, they're buying a little baby that pops out of their mommy just because of bloodline. This is a 16-year-old that's never lost a fight.
Yes. And when I think about that, when I look at my kids, because my oldest son's 13, and when I see how much he's changed in the last couple years, so I got into Bitcoin, he was 9, and he was a little boy, and now he looks like a man. He's taller than I am. So I think of Bitcoin like 3 years older than that. You're like ready to drive. You're in your prime. You know, you're growing up bigger than the adults around you. And you've never lost a fight. You know, you think of it as this kid who's like unstoppable and he's just getting started. You compare it to kind of how you were, you know, thinking about how you started off without having your father at a young age and, you know, what you've accomplished in your life too. Is just kind of crazy to see how you can have all these adversities and you can overcome. Almost like the harder it is, the tougher you become. Do you wonder sometimes about if billionaires were to buy Bitcoin tomorrow, if all of them went out and bought some? It's like you have to play this game of like, if I buy too much, I can move markets because everyone's going to do it at the same time. So the bigger Bitcoin gets, the more these people actually notice Bitcoin, say, oh, I can move my money there now because it's big enough where I won't move markets. So it attracts more people the bigger it gets.
I think that was maybe a worry 3 years ago. I don't think any. The greatest worry for people that invest money, especially guys that do it in really big consolidated ways, like I am a very, very heavy consolidated investor. I do not believe in diversification. I think it means that I have gone weak in my thesis on what I should do. And my job is to constantly look for something that I can like really dive into and almost lose myself that the opportunity is so big. The greatest fear for people like us is that you can get in, but you can't get out. Getting into a market is easy. Just ask anybody that's bought XRP. Getting out. You know, if you don't have the liquidity, I've been in these markets when they're developing. Everything I've ever done is early. No liquidity. My job is to help liquidity. Like you want these markets really, really healthy. $50 billion a day trades in Bitcoin. Okay. Like my brother called me up one day. He said, hey, I'm going to buy 1,000 Bitcoin. How long is it going to take me? I said, about 6 days. He said, no, really serious. I said, yeah, 6 days, no one will even know you're there. Like you could probably do it in one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably buy 1,000 Bitcoin in one day and not move this market.
Yeah.
Michael Saylor's buying all the output from every miner on the planet. Like he's literally sucking up every coin if they're selling and they're not. And
is he buying over the counter? Is that what that's called? Like from the miners?
I suspect they're using every tool available over the counter, under the counter, across the market. But he's using an algorithm that's extremely sophisticated and he doesn't want to disturb the market. And I think other people are now using these algos. I got to tell you, this is an extremely non-violent market for the volume we're talking about. You guys don't know what look like what volatility is. Volatility is electricity. Okay, like Bitcoin is not really that volatile relative to what it brings you and how much it costs to hold it. Electricity is violent. Okay, I mean just violent. Crude oil is traded at negative prices. Nat gas is traded at negative prices. Crude oil is electricity is traded at negative prices. Bitcoin will never trade at a negative price. And the reason is because it's got decimals out 10 places. Nat gas has decimals out to 0, 1, like 0, 0. So you can't go, you go negative. This is an era of the analog world. And if people just consider, you don't need to really understand Bitcoin. You need to understand we are not going back to the 8-track tape. Okay. And by that, I mean, I have 50,000 pieces of music on my telephone. It's not even through Apple. I'm using Spotify. Boy, that's interesting. I'm using a music platform sitting on an exchange called Apple, and Apple came with the bloody music thing. So people have a very weird way of using things, right? Now, in these 50,000 pieces of music, now I have AI telling me other music that I must like because I like those 50,000. Like, we are moving into a digital world fast, man. Very, very, very rapidly. And the analog world, these tools, imagine me painting a picture. Like, I'm trying to learn how to paint. Imagine if I'm painting it on a cave wall. You're probably going to go, hey, Gary, you know, there's a thing called canvases, right? You don't have to use animal blood. There's paint, there's oils. We're progressing. We're progressing with technology, with faster and better things. And I just don't think the pencil and the piece of paper is going to be able to do the job for a world. I have one client that traded 1 billion transactions last year in digital assets. 1 billion, one human being. Okay. One human being. We settled him down. I own a company that does forensic accounting for crypto called Node 40. We settled him down to 98 pennies. 1 billion transactions, $589 million in trade. And we settled him. His whole book settled to 98 cents. That never happens in legacy. So we've created, now digital allows me to walk into the IRS or any agency and go, hey, prove that I'm wrong. This is settled down to zero. This is powerful, powerful technology. People should not be scared of this. They should be, one, it is not going away.
Right.
It's not. You never get rid of stuff like this. It's too much intellectual capital. I don't need to look at the Bitcoin price. What I need to do is look at how many people and who are they and what type of brain power do they have that are moving into this industry. It is the largest infusion of intellectual capital I have ever seen. And they're coming from everywhere, folks. They're coming from politics, finance, Wall Street, $7 million a year running a hedge fund. I'm out of that deal. I want to go do this deal. And they are making enormous amounts of money. Dan Tapiro is going to be one of the wealthiest people because he was willing to walk away from the old world. And now he's got, you know, he's in everything. So this is truly a once in a century event.
Right.
I mean, truly, it's not a once in a decade. This is a once in a century event.
It's not once in a lifetime. It's once in a bloodline. You know, this can make your legacy, you know, for your family because it's so.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you talk about your kid. You know, I met Anthony Scaramucci 3 or 4 years ago. I said, hey, Anthony, how much crypto, how much Bitcoin you got? And what's your average price? I ask everyone, what is your average price? And I go crazy when I hear these people, 700. Bro, why didn't you keep buying? Well, I own 30,000. That's the wrong answer. Why did you not keep buying? See, I think the guy that owns $300 Bitcoin, he lost the thesis where something broke down because I'm not selling any of this shit at 100 grand. Okay, my average cost is 45 grand. I want my average cost to be 80. That means I'm going to double or triple my position here. There's too many brilliant people moving into this space. Find somebody that's dumb that owns 100 Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Find somebody that's dumb that spent 25 hours reading about Bitcoin, not listening spaces, reading the white paper, reading Jeff Booth's Cost of Tomorrow, read Larry Lepard's book on the economics, you know, how this thing's so broken. Just read 20 hours. I've never seen anyone not invest more money in Bitcoin after 25 hours of work.
Especially when you know that, you know, even if you think, oh, my average price is $300 or $700 Bitcoins, but when you think about the money you're continuing to make, if you're whatever, you know, fiat you have coming in, it's getting debased. So what's the point of holding it in? And it's not beating Bitcoin. Like you said, nothing's beaten Bitcoin. It's the fastest horse, you know? So why would you keep it in anything else besides Bitcoin? You're just losing against inflation. So it just makes no sense. And that's why, yeah, people that have spent time reading these books, there's nobody that's gotten into Bitcoin that's turned around and said, yeah, I was wrong. You know, like I don't like it. You know, I haven't heard of anybody like that.
Oh, I've heard of a few. Yeah. 99% of the time, it is someone who has this really heavy duty emotional wound. They sold $7,000 Bitcoin and they waited for four and it never came back. And now it's at 70 and they're like, oh my God. Well, you know what? You made a mistake, dude. You missed the beautiful wife. Now she's not available anymore. Okay. She's gone, dude. You snoozed, you lose. I mean, now we're at 70 and there's a whole section of players that just came in this space that wanted to pick 75 and 80s up. And their advisor said, wait, and they're going to pay 125. They're buying monster volumes now, man. Like I have friends walk in, I need 200. I need 1,000. Like I'm still not finished. I have a volume goal. Like I think people should set a goal. You know, if you think you can get to 5 Bitcoin, set it for 10. Mm-hmm. If you think, don't tell me you can't get to 1. I have 10 jobs at my house. I could literally pay 100 grand in cash this weekend just in jobs. That's one home. Okay. Yeah. We have all these migration issues. Don't tell me that you're not going to have job availability. Like people are not working hard enough. You should be mining fiat and moving that into Bitcoin like you're a gold miner, and you're going to be one of the richest people on this planet if you're disciplined. No movie theaters. Stop going on stupid dates with your stupid girlfriend who wants to do stupid stuff. Like, if you're 30, dude, you just have to, like, be disciplined, be responsible, suffer. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like, I could get on a plane and take my kids, you know, into the Cayman Islands and spend 50 grand scuba diving, but I'm like, shit, dude, not right now. I'll do it in 2 years.
Yeah. I think about that too when I see people that are well off or whatever, and they're like, we're doing all this remodeling to our house right now and we're doing all this stuff. And I'm like, good, that's great. It's nice. I mean, I guess you want to enjoy your life, but right now, I'm like, do you know what's happening right now? I feel like this is such a critical moment that I just can't believe people would rather do that now than buy Bitcoin, just because it's like, you can do that in a few years. Is it going to really make you happy to have these things in your life that you're really going to just see it's going to fulfill you? You know, is that going to, you know, save your kids from the future, from being, you know, broke, from not having anything? Because, you know, I just think it's like crazy that people can't see what's going on.
I think there's a lot of things that we need to learn. I was going to say relearn, but learn. One of the things I would say to you, I know your mom, but college would be the last thing I would do with any of my children. I mean, my second kid will not go to college. He will have to like do something spectacular. I would like my first kid not to go to college, but she wants to be a vet. Look, I don't see these people. There's no discipline anymore. You know, I keep hearing these Gen Zs and Xs and they're all angry at the boomers. Hey, look, I'm disciplined. You're not. Like at 21 years old, I wasn't fucking around. I left my zip code and I grew up and I started making a contribution. I worked really hard. I had to work harder than everybody else because I was dumber. I had this accent. I was insecure. You guys are not like just being a victim and going, oh, it's so expensive in California. Leave.
Right.
Like I wouldn't live. I lived in California. I sold my house to Russell Simms, said, I'm out of here, dude. This is too expensive. And the people aren't good people. When people show up an hour late for a meeting and they don't even apologize, like it's a normal behavior. Mm-hmm. But school.
Well, that's why your mindset is so important, because you are adaptable. You are okay with change. You know what you need to do, and you move on from something if it's not working. And a lot of people just get stuck and they're afraid of change. And just knowing that, you know, if it's not working for you, do something else, and you just believe in yourself. When you, again, like you said, playing the victim, if you think like that your whole life, you're going to be that person. But if you just, you know, believe like you do, just go do something, make a change in your life, and then it brings all these opportunities, which you know, you've proven that has done for you. I think the future is changing so much that I think by the time my kids are ready to go to college, we'd rather have them do something they're passionate about, be happy, be creative, do something they love with their life. And I think Bitcoin gives you the freedom to do that in your life. If we were to, you know, work hard now and save our money and not do the house remodeling right now, you know, and just keep saving our money for them and for us, then they can grow up and, you know, get married and have a life and enjoy their kids and do something they enjoy doing. You know, obviously you're going to do something with your time, but I don't think it has to be this slave labor kind of system that we're used to. It's like even colleges have become a monopoly when you talk about monopolies, you know, in a way. I don't know.
Well, if you pick a job that looks like a slave, you're probably going to become one. I mean, I think, first off, all the information that's sitting in school systems and colleges is incorrect. It is a lie. There is no truth to any of it whatsoever. Happy to have a conversation about that. But our data has changed so rapidly, radically. If I was I am a parent, my kids will never work for me. It's not even an offer. I don't want them working with me. Okay. I'm a weird guy. But if I'm a parent, like, and I know a Jeff Booth or Gary Cardone, I'm not sending my kids to school. Hey, Jeff, how much would it cost me for my kid to become an apprentice of yours? I do not know why I don't get one phone call a week from a family member going, hey, I want my kid to go spend 6 months with you, dude.
Right.
Okay. And by the way, they leave mommy and daddy. And if they don't show up on time, I fire their ass immediately. And they start, I got fired twice. Like I had to learn, oh shit, man. You know, almost got fired three times at one company. And because, I just didn't know how to cooperate and work with other people. I was aggressive and insecure and I had to show up on time. I had to learn to do all these things. To me, that would be a bit, let's go back to the Roman time. Michelangelo, maybe the greatest marbleist of all time, his first job was working for a mediocre marble worker, and his job was to basically broom the dust out of the marble studio. If you do any art, you know, hey, look, if it's dirty, you can't actually do anything. So this is he learned how to do. Of course he needs to know how to do that, right? And he became a master. You don't need to learn from a master. You need to learn master principles and the way people think. Get around somebody that's weird, man. Don't go for normal. Go for weird. Not psychotic.
Right.
But Jeff Booth's a weird cat, dude. Mm-hmm. I'm a weird, weird guy, right? I just think differently.
I'm pretty weird too. People usually think I'm pretty weird, but it's like, I think that's what you need to be to kind of think outside the box. But even when I went to my trade school and I went to learn to do hair, I did that for 2 years during high school. And when I finished, I was so scared. I didn't know anything still. And then when I started actually working and working with my mom, I learned from her everything that I know. Like I learned from watching and helping and doing all that stuff. You learn from actually doing it, you know, from being in there. So it's like a lot of the stuff, it's like, go to school, get the hours, do this. But it's like, why isn't apprenticeship more valued? You know, it's like you learn from real world experience so much more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't waste 4 years. When I was in England, I had a friend named Casper McDonald Hall. And he laughed at me when he met me, very British, three names, you know. And he's like, man, while you were in college, I was making my first £1 million. He saw no need at all. He hangs out with Greek shipping magnates. He doesn't have an education. Cat's one of the richest people in England and lives an unbelievable life, right? You start to look at these people that live these lives. I would encourage people, don't look at normal. Normal doesn't pay well. It's boring, okay? The vast majority of people all make the same mistake. They want to herd up. It's nice and comfortable. And then they all fall off the freaking cliff. You love whoever you're listening. You love extreme personalities. You love champions. You love bizarre people that don't fit in the mold. And then we spend all our life trying to make sure that we don't stick out. Yet all the great people, man, they're all, Donald Trump is going to get rewarded for being crazy, outrageous. Elon Musk, Michael Saylor, right? The champions of the world are different people. And I just think this is about every human being embracing who they actually are. You're more finite than Bitcoin.
Right.
Like I have become a better human being around Bitcoin because it dawned on me, wow, one of 21 million is a really big deal. Like, it's really a finite product. Like, I finally can buy something that has a supply, real supply constraint to it. And then I woke up one day and went, dude, I'm a one of one. What does that make me worth?
Right.
I am most certainly worth more than $109,000 right now. Because, and the more I embrace, Stacy, my one of oneness, and I don't listen to my ex-wife or I don't listen to that partner, I one, am more happy. And two, I seem to obtain more value from the world. Like, I get more adulation, not through ego, but I get more connection by being me, being that one of 21 or that one of one.
When you try to fit in all the time, you feel more alone, you know? But when you actually stand out, it's like, even in school, I was never like part of one of those cliques. I was never part of that group. And I felt like I was always trying to be, and you're trying to fit into this world and you just feel like you're kind of an outsider.
And think about what you've done. You know, you're an outsider to the other people. You've betrayed yourself. You've literally turned your back. I've turned my back on myself to be more like them. I see my kids doing this. I can't tell them not to do it. They're going to have to go through it.
Right.
And realize, oh my God, man, I'm mutating myself just to be what? Liked?
Yeah. Just so you can fit in when you really don't want to fit in. And we try to tell our kids that too, but you're right. They don't listen. They have to find that out on their own, because when they try to be like their friends or dress like their friends, or they want something their friends have, we're like, who cares? Be different. It's cool to be different. Like, embrace that. But they don't get it till they get to that point in their own life. But yeah, it's fun when you get to that point in your life when you feel like you can actually be yourself. Like, people do not, again, it's not because of ego, but people see it and they appreciate it. Like, people appreciate your truth and your uniqueness. Like, you're not another clone.
You gotta look around and ask yourself, hey, is it working for these people? Really? Really? I mean, you just got to look closely though. Is it really working? I don't think it's working. So most certainly your children, my children are going to grow up in a, I think, challenging time, but I grew up in that time. It was good for me. I grew up in a recession. I operate really well in recessions. They don't scare me. A depression wouldn't scare me. My family, I remember hearing stories about the depression. I didn't hear anybody saying they were unhappy. They were hungry. But you know what? Community was around. Nobody was taking Adderall and antidepressants, and my kids talking about, hey, depression. I'm like, oh my God, man. Look, and being a teenager, you do get depressed, okay? I just wish the teachers would go, hey, you're going through a lot of shit. You're learning who you are. You're learning who you are. It's confusing.
Yes.
I mean, gosh.
Like, yeah.
Why don't we teach that in school?
Yes. I know. Just to be just kinder to yourself, knowing that you're changing, knowing that your mind changes all the time. Like, you're in this crazy moment in your life.
I've got a kid that's lived in 14 homes, and I'll put her against any kid anywhere. Friends of mine come over to my house and they're like, 14 homes? We are poor kids. I'm like, have you looked around here? I mean, it's just not look like it's horrible. My kids have had like experience to live a lot of places. My child at 18 has her best friend is getting ready to go to college. She's never been out of the state by herself. Like that is something you have to learn how to do now. You have to learn how to travel without mom bugging you all the time, or like not getting hurt. And my daughter walks through international airports like, hey, why is everybody so freaked out? She's done it her whole life. I mean, for her, it's just been like, hey, this is what we do. Like getting on a bus, right? If you can get travel sorted out and someone can actually access the world, then they can go learn who they are. I think you can't learn who you are while you're still hanging out with mommy. This is a big deal. Like, for me as a man, my mom kicking me out of the house was really, really, really important. She did the right thing. It had to be horribly difficult for her. But I tell you what, it saved my life. I would have ended up in prison. Literally, I would have ended up in prison or dead.
That's crazy.
Her kicking me out of that house and me leaving the zip code. Like, you'll notice my brother and I, we don't really spend much time together. And we really are not good in the same city or state. We just have a lot of energy. And to Like, I think we would have destroyed that town.
You're twins, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're a little crazy. We spin each other up. We just have a tremendous amount of energy.
Well, look at the energy you did to my light. You burnt out my light.
Yeah. I don't know that I did that, but you're the powerful one.
Yeah.
But it's most certainly, look, this is, to me, it's an awesome opportunity to be an 18, 19-year-old, because it's the people that have been in college to 50 years old that are getting ready to get slaughtered. This happens when you have these disruptions. It's the 25 to 45-year-olds that have careers, and they're living in the old world. They're holding on to the old world. You need to be, everyone should be reading right now, educating yourself on what is happening. Is a once-in-a-century event. Like, that is a big deal, okay? When you hear that, you're like, what does that mean? It means it hasn't happened for 1,000 years and won't happen for another 1,000. Mm-hmm. That's significant.
And I think for people that don't understand what is changing right now, is like, they call it the fourth turning, or they call it like right now with the US dollar being around for as many years as it's been around, and how it's being hyperinflated, and how all these countries around the world, like fiat currencies, are getting debased. I think that's kind of why we're seeing that Bitcoin is the base of this new financial system, and why you should, save your money in that, something that can't be stolen or debased from you, right? Is that and this technological shift, right? That's like the major, Bitcoin is a technology, but it's also energy, it's money, it's so many things. That's why it's like, it's a combination, of so many amazing things in one. I don't even want to call it a product, but it's hard to describe sometimes what it is, but it's definitely transformative.
The way I look at it is, a number, whether it's 1, 1 million, 10 million, does not equate to value. We have been sold a number, quantity or price, but value, like, let's say that you fell in love with me. You're like, oh, you're the best guy I've ever met. It just, everything hits your value stream. There's no price you put on that. Like, because it's value. People do not understand the price of true quality, true value, because it has no price.
Yeah.
It's like, just look around it. Where is the authenticity on this planet? It's very rare. Okay, well, authenticity must be value.
Yeah. Like,
a perfect piece of fruit is better than one that's just all hammered. Right. Mm-hmm. And so which one am I going to value more? Hey, I just want some peaches.
Well, you're talking about energy too, right there, because that thing, it's like energy, like emotions are valuable, like connections are valuable. Bitcoin is this whole network of connections and people connected.
Unbelievable, by the way. Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to interrupt you there, what I have done in 4 years in this industry, now I've been doing this a long time, and I may do it with a little bit more confidence of other people. I know everyone here. In less than 3 years, I literally came in this space. I've never been on X before. I started studying Bitcoin. I'm like, my God, dude, I have found my home. This is my value spot. And so I'm going to meet every major swinging Richard in this industry. And within 3 years, I just got through playing 3 hours of cards with Fong Li. I mean, of MicroStrategy. I mean, this market is wide open. Like, I think people should quit talking about Bitcoin as a savings program. It is a industry, my friends. It's an industry, okay? Like, I just hired this lady who's making $250,000 a year, and her pay package is only going up for now, because she's going to get rid of the small clients that got her here, and she's going to upgrade to people like me. And she's an awesome human being.
Mm-hmm.
Ability and reputation. Do not blow your credibility in this industry. It is 20-year opportunity here to get extremely well-paying jobs without any credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Zero. You do not have to have worked at JP Morgan to come in the Bitcoin industry.
Amazing.
Okay. You don't have to know anything about AI. Now, you're going to have to learn stuff. Okay. But mm-hmm. It's not like you have to go study for 4 years. Everyone is at the same level. Like, I've already surpassed my understanding and probably financial position of 99% of all the people that have been around long before me. Okay. And I actually think me and my group of people that came in between, say, 18 and now, we will make the most money than all the people before us. All of it, dude. Like, all of it. We are going to make so much freaking money because we know what we're doing here. We will, like, if our package triples, we will keep investing in this. Okay, we're not weak hands.
And that's not priced in, really, when people think about the people
that
are...
You can't price that in. You cannot price in what Howard Lutnick's diamond hands capability are. Like no chance. Though there's 20 or 30, look, I know price is going to move because 20% of all the Bitcoin that was bought at $700 or less has to come out of the whale's hands. It has to get into the market. Okay. So, and there's only one way to do that.
Price.
Number go up. And number go up is the greatest technology in the history of mankind. I know you Bitcoiners are going to hate this, but number go up is all that matters right now. It is the only thing that gets everyone's attention. It will bury Powell at the Fed. It will keep every politician honest. You want that number up, up, and going up, and just going vertical up as long as you possibly can. It's the only thing that keeps people honest, folks.
Yeah, and they start to pay attention more, and they can't ignore it. You know, they have to, you know, bend the knee. You know, it's like they're gonna learn. You know,
your ego. See, you have to have the pain like the kid does when he realizes, oh, I'm pretending to be someone else. I'm uncomfortable with that. Ooh, I'm pretending to be myself. Oh gosh, I don't know what that is. I'm uncomfortable with that, and you're left with, I better get comfortable with being myself. So I got to learn who I am. The ego is a shocking thing. Okay. When people are too comfortable, their egos are too comfortable. My lawyer called me yesterday. He's been watching this since 15,000, and I'm a fairly loud human being. I was in a courtroom once and someone suggested that I should be in bonds. And I'm like, so you and the judge think that I should place my children in a 4% 20-year bond when inflation is 15 or 20 or 25%? Are you fucking people crazy? You just want to have a slow death. I'm not interested in killing my children. And everybody was like, these are all 70-year-old guys. And they're like, whoa, he's got a good point. Now, that man called me yesterday. He said, what's Bitcoin's price? I said, 110, 498. He said, no way. I said, I told you, Peter. I told you, dude. Now, that's left him. They will pay up, my friend. They'll pay 150. They'll pay 180. They'll pay 250. They'll buy it when it gets higher. They love paying a lot.
It's like they just like how you said, like when you're trying to figure out who you are and your ego's in the way when you're a young kid, their ego's in the way now. So it's like the second phase of growing up. It's like you grew up once and now you have to grow up again to kind of let go of that ego again and be like, all right, now I don't care so much that I believe that I was right or wrong or I had to fit in with the crowd and do what everyone else is doing, get the financial planner. You know, it's like, cause you realize they don't really know. And I would feel bad being a financial planner in these times. I mean, it feels like you're just like selling junk to people and I don't know. It's almost like
gotta make your fees some way. See, that system's really, I've never used a financial advisor in my life. Neither has my brother. We manage our own money. People go, Hey, you know, your family office or who does it? I'm like, Why would I let anybody do it? I don't know anybody that's created six businesses by themselves. I don't think that guy went through what I went through. By the way, why isn't he richer than me? I mean, if he's going to be my advisor, maybe he should be like a baller.
Right.
Like my advisor, I want my advisor to be Fong Li, Michael Saylor, Howard Lutnick, you know, the Gemini twins. I mean, these guys have clocked some major players. I can learn from people younger than me for sure. I mean, all day long, but I don't want to learn from somebody that's not as accomplished. Why would I do that?
And they don't take the time to learn about new things.
By the way, it brings you back to school. Like literally your 12-year-old is being taught by somebody that you don't want them to be. You literally don't want them to emulate your teachers. Oh my gosh. I wanted to be like my teachers, man. They were cool people. They were cool people.
That's crazy. It's like you just realize that, you know, it's just such a weird thing when you have kids and you start to think this way, because you always think that, like when I first had kids, I thought, oh, one day they'll grow up and go to college. But it's just crazy to think that you just don't really believe this. Like you change as an adult, like how you changed. You had to move and go to different places to evolve. It's almost like with muscles, like if you don't use your muscles, they start to atrophy, you know? So it's like, if you don't change things in your life, it starts to just die. You know, you're like you said, slow death, you know, with capital, if you're not investing it the right way. So it's like, you need to make changes and you need to adapt.
Have you ever read the book, Antifragile?
No.
Yeah. As a parent, reading Antifragile is a beautiful book. It talks about the necessity, it's an awesome book. I see Bitcoin is super antifragile. Antifragile being it doesn't break. It's been tested. Okay. The knees are strong. I mean, it's just been so I think it's an awesome book for parents, because it kind of gives you permission to let your children bust their face up. You know, make mistakes, suffer, have some consequences.
That is important.
It makes them tough, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I think it's great to see that Bitcoin's gone through so much. It's been through all these attacks. It's been through the block size wars. And now it's going through this whole core thing that's happening. It doesn't affect Bitcoin or fork Bitcoin. So it's almost like just like a lot of noise right now that's going on with that whole thing. I don't know.
Sometimes without being a technologist, it's a little difficult to know what is real and what is emotion. In the crypto world, it does have a lot of cultural, emotional baggage, and I think some misunderstandings. You know, like Jeff, you interviewed Jeff. I love Jeff. I think he's brilliant, brilliant man. I'm probably going to invest with him in his second fund. But when he says, "Hey, if Bitcoin doesn't go peer-to-peer, it's a failure." One, he's a very, very bright guy. You have to really listen to what he said. Now, he didn't say that it had to happen tomorrow morning. Okay, and I actually agree with him. Hey, if Bitcoin is really going to work the way it was designed, peer-to-peer is the ultimate goal. But there's no chance of it being peer-to-peer in the next 2 years. And the reason of that is not the way adoption on a global scale occurs, okay? It's not the way it happens. It must go through the Wall Street banking system. I know nobody likes that, but like Bitcoin's either for everyone or it's not. It's for the enemy also. It's for the banks. The banks are going to die on this sword, okay? They do not know what to do with this thing. It's going to mutate all over them. And the real Bitcoiners are like me going, JP Morgan and Bank of America will not distort this. I mean, they're going to distort it a little bit, but they're not going to distort it any more than Michael Saylor's distorted it. You know, I'm not saying he changed it, but I'm just saying that the more players you get in here, the better.
Yeah, I agree with that too. The one thing I wonder about is, I don't know if I worry about it, but I just wonder about it, is the more like institutional and governmental adoption that we get in Bitcoin, which is happening quickly. I think the people, when you think Bitcoin is for everyone, for all the people in countries that their currencies especially are being debased quicker than in the US, you hope that those people would find it faster and get some before this whole, you know, mass adoption happens. And then I feel like once these bigger entities suck it all up, then there will be less left for the everyday person. So I just wonder what the world will look like. Will it be, because I'm against CBDCs and I don't like that, but it's like, is that what the world will be like, where whoever holds the Bitcoin will now be able to issue CBDCs for people who are the ones who didn't get it and now are told where and when they could spend their money? That's kind of what I wonder about.
I think CBDCs and stable coins are something that people should really watch out. I'm a little worried that they're named differently, but they will be effectively the same thing. But I don't really get overly concerned about that because, look, the system's so broken now. You know, it's kind of like, okay, well, like somebody said, hey, it's a CIA project. All right. Well, if it's a if Bitcoin's a CIA project, that means that the dollar's a CIA project and everything else is CIA. So who cares? Oh, by the way, quantum computing. If quantum computing is going to attack Bitcoin, I'm pretty sure it's going to attack the entire quadrillions of dollars sitting in bonds, in Fortran, in stupid computer programs. Why would you go attack Bitcoin at $2 trillion and it's locked down?
I think I saw you say that. I thought that was
stupid.
So smart.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
If that's my only fear, quantum computing, I mean, that's like saying, hey, Jesus might come down and steal the code. Okay, cool. Like, if I got to lose because Jesus came down and stole the code.
Yeah.
I've lost money on worse. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
It's a very illogical, irrational viewpoint.
Yeah.
Back to the 16-year-old champion. Imagine if your kid at 16 had also been invited to every private dinner country club on planet Earth. Okay, your kid is not going to get in every major country club in the world, you know, the 5 and 6 star country clubs. Bitcoin has been invited to every private club on planet Earth. Once these ETFs got launched, okay, he has a full ride for life in every country club. You're telling me that your kid wouldn't have an edge? XRP hasn't been invited to that party. Solana has not been invited to that party. Ethereum is not big enough to be invited to that party. We know that now because no country is going to put any of those on its reserve. They're too small.
Right.
If the only reason is they're too small, it's got to be $500 trillion or more. And that's why I say Bitcoin is the cat daddy. It's only $2 trillion. It exceeds every limit of every risk management team, making it a valuable and an area they can invest in. None of these others have that. None of them.
Okay. That's why when people think, well, there could be another Bitcoin, well, the network effect wins. And Bitcoin already won.
See, this is what I don't understand, though, Stacey. Why would Solana want to compete with Bitcoin? The competition is JP Morgan, US dollars, the CBDCs. Why are you guys competing with Bitcoin? You're going to get your faces ripped off. Okay. You're not going to win that battle. You're going up against King Kong. The enemy is the legacy market. Build tools for the legacy market. There's massive margins there. I mean, XRP should become a gaming token or an adult token. And those tokens get arbitrage Visa, MasterCard, rail fees. Quit. You're not going to beat Bitcoin.
I think that they just do it because, like, this is not anything real. It's just my thoughts. But I just think that people that create these other tokens, they're controlled by, you know, a few at the top, you know, that hold the most supply. So it's like the crypto casino, they draw people in, they advertise, they bring a lot of like dumb money in to kind of like try to get rich because they think they miss Bitcoin. Then they go and sell and buy more Bitcoin themselves. Because I think everyone eventually they want Bitcoin. So they're just trying to sucker some people in on the way up, you know, so they can move on to the big boy.
Yeah. But the cool thing is people have enough data now. They can really understand what it is they're investing at. And I know the excuse is, hey, it's $108,000. Well, $1,000 in the XRP or $1,000 in the Bitcoin is $1,000. It's still a $1,000 investment. I think people are looking at this. If you're looking at it going, oh, wow, I just bought 3 million coins. Okay, cool. You got 3 million coins. I've got 3 million ants outside my house. It doesn't make it valuable.
Yeah.
It makes it a problem.
Right. That's true. It's so true. They act like XRP is going to compete with Visa and this and that, but so many things are being built on top of Bitcoin. The network effect ultimately wins.
Don't get me wrong, though, Stacey. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do think there is a use case for some of these. Okay. Like I am never going to buy potato chips with Bitcoin. Not until it's a penny a sat. It makes no sense for me to buy potato chips with Bitcoin unless the retailer is going to give me a big old discount, and he's going to assure me he's going to keep Bitcoin in his reserve.
True.
If he's just going to convert it back into a Visa transaction, why? I don't want to spend my money with that guy. I'd rather spend XRP money.
That's true, because I think that when you do pay Lightning, when you pay in Bitcoin to a store, they're saving on credit card fees. So you should definitely be getting a discount for not having to give them credit card.
You should save more than that. You should save at least 3.5%. If you're an adult merchant, 15%.
Right.
Bitcoin is a settlement system. I don't care if we only settle one transaction a day. Visa and MasterCard, and you want to just clip this part. Visa and MasterCard do not settle any transactions for 180 days.
Wow.
I don't care how many transactions they do. That's like a guy just whipping around a racetrack and like, okay, good. You went around the racetrack a bunch of times, but what did you accomplish? I can file a chargeback for 180 days. The problem is so large at the card schemes. MasterCard just proposed 280 or 247 days for you to be able to call your bank up and go, yeah, I didn't buy that chair I'm sitting in. I want to dispute. Okay, came in, it's got a little mark on it, I want my money back. Immediately, whether you're lying or not, that flows into the entire payment rails. And it's going to cost whatever that couch costs, it's going to cost 4x for the merchant to deal with the problem. Who's paying for that? Joe consumer that doesn't file chargebacks and request refunds. Me and you. We're paying for it. It's adding literally 15 or 20% to everything we buy. This is the US government should stop this bullshit. The consumer is being obliterated.
Yeah, I did not realize that. So that's why you're saying that when you pay with Bitcoin, it should be that much less because you don't have these chargebacks.
I'm not buying potato chips. It is dumb. Okay. It is dumb. I would accept Bitcoin for this home at a discount to fiat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bitcoin should always trade at a discount to fiat because one, it settles, two, it's instant. Uh-huh. It's the greatest collateral in the world. This is how I got my brother into this. He did not understand when I told him, bro, your real estate, any finance problems you have with real estate, wrap them all up and put Bitcoin on. Because you're going to be able to repackage that. Let's say he's got 7-8% interest on some, you know, a couple of his facilities. He takes all that out. Let's say that's $100 million. He buys $100 million worth of Bitcoin, smashes it into that portfolio. One, his interest is contained. Two, he's going to be, I believe, wholeheartedly, well, I am certain because I can tell the way the banks that are legacy banks are treating me relative to how much Bitcoin I hold, which I don't even hold it with them. But they're starting to look at my holding going, whoa, dude, we're not losing this cat. They want the Bitcoin action. Now, 2 years ago, they would hold that against me. Grant is going to be able to borrow money on real estate cheaper than anyone else in the world because Bitcoin is sitting there as collateral. Guarantee you that's going to happen. And now that's a game changer, okay? That is a monster game changer. That means people that have Bitcoin are going to have cheaper cost of capital.
Yeah, premium.
And cheaper cost of capital is everything. Like, it's the game. Okay. He who has the cheapest capital, it's a little bit like the energy guy.
Yeah. And isn't it also like the people closest to the money printer get the cheapest rates?
Yeah.
Like,
and the money printer here is Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah.
Without a dilution machine behind it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's incredible. Wow.
A lot of different ways to spin this message, isn't it? It's like you get a Jeff Booth and you get a crazy guy like me, then you get...
I love it. It gets you thinking. Like, I feel like my mind just thinks I have all these ideas. Like, one thing I was wondering real quick was about Cash App, because I always tell people to use Cash App because you don't feel like you're spending your Bitcoin. Now, what do you think about it? Because what it does is it takes your fiat, just like how you're spending Venmo money. And then if the merchant decides to accept it as Bitcoin, it automatically converts it through Lightning to whatever percentage of Bitcoin you like to accept as that. So if I wanted to make it 100%, somebody could pay me in Cash App with fiat, and then I get it in Bitcoin. So I think I like that as a payment, because then you could feel like you could tell people to pay with Bitcoin, but it does still use Visa, I think.
Yeah, the chargebacks won't be the issue for you. Look, if you want to help the enemy, you help the enemy.
Okay. They don't.
This is, you know, you get into Bitcoin and you're not looking around who you're doing business with. I don't really understand why you're in Bitcoin, because you're in Bitcoin because you're doing a trade that's, I mean, in a way, you're, without buying a put option, you're literally buying an insurance policy on the old world and going, I think this thing's going to fail, man. And I want to be a part of it. So I'm going to own Bitcoin. If it fails, Bitcoin's going up.
Right.
The old legacy world, if you guys are going to dig, you know, paint on a stone wall and you don't think we're going to digitize, if we're wrong and the legacy world does really, really well, well, you haven't gotten hurt by Bitcoin. Bitcoin's not going to go down because the whole economy is good. Okay. I think actually Bitcoin could go up and the economy could get crushed and you're going to win both ways. But I don't know why I would support, Visa if I don't have to.
Right.
Part of this game, if you're an anarchist, is cut off supplies to the enemy. Okay. If you're spending money on Netflix and you don't have as much Bitcoin as me, you might not be able to afford Netflix this month. You should be buying $15 of Bitcoin. If you make $80,000 a year, I got to tell you, okay, you don't deserve to drive a Range Rover that's a 2024, cost you 180 grand or 80 grand for that matter. You should be driving an $8,000 car that you paid cash for, like the kind of car you and I drove when we were kids. I'm sorry, but I did not have a brand new car till I was probably 40. Right? And I bought one Rolex watch when I made my first $1 million and I saved the rest of it. And then I probably wasted it on some dot-com bubble, but I'm not making any of those mistakes anymore. And there's so many people that are older than you guys and more experienced that you can listen to and go, hey, I don't need to repeat those mistakes.
Right.
Okay. Like diversification. People talk about diversification. That is a total lie. Okay. You don't get rich having 14 different 401ks. It doesn't happen that way. You get rich by, hey, I'm building my own damn business, man. Okay, I'm betting on Gary. So, this thesis here, I mean, there's like, I look around, hey, there's a lot of companies I do not want to support. They don't want you to have free money.
So
okay, they want you in debt at 23%. I'm telling you, do not do that. Okay, that's, you're drowning yourself. You're going to drown your marriage. You're going to drown your kids. You're not going to have a good life.
Yeah. So I like to use I don't like to use credit. I like to use just cash. So what do you think as an anarchist? Because I like to think of it that way too. I don't want to be benefiting the system. But like when you make payments, it's like either use credit or use like, it's just like cash is, I mean, they always say cash is king, but Bitcoin is really king because cash is trash. So it's,
well, I'll be, like, hey, listen, if you let me use a credit card, I'm using my credit card every time.
Yeah.
I'm going to use an American Express every time. I think American Express is not, they are part of the problem, but they're not the duopoly.
Mm-hmm.
American Express requires me to pay off my bill at the end of the month. I have a $9,000 Visa debit card I never use, or a credit card. Like
those Visa, MasterCard, they're the duopoly.
Most people have like 17 more credit cards than I do. I'm like, why do y'all have so many? I need one. I don't need 40. Okay. I'm not running credit lines. Like you need to get that. You can't wake up in the morning and already have a 30-pound weight around your neck and, hey, I'm going to go swimming. I mean, it's going to be a hard swim. Most certainly you're not going to swim as fast as me. So if you look at the world as very competitive, look, for me, the anarchy word doesn't mean that I wouldn't use Coinbase or Binance or Kraken now. I think these exchanges have been cleaned up. And I think you need them here. Where would we be if Coinbase had not spent $150 million trying to beat the SEC up? So I'm going to do business with Coinbase, although it's not pure Bitcoin. It's got some centralization. They're a public company. That's the world we live in. I would rather support them than Visa. Right?
Yeah. And you could still cold storage it afterwards. So even if you buy it.
And by the way, they have a big custodian business there. And just for the record, okay, you can't come to my house and grab my wallets. I don't have any. Like, I've pushed this out to, I do not control my Bitcoin. I don't want to control it. Okay. And the reason, I have two children. So you better come in, you know, just shoot me in the face because there's nothing to get here.
That's true.
And I don't think that's a bad message. Okay. A guy like me needs to do it that way. I'm a gun owner. I do not carry 100 weapons with me. Ever.
Yeah.
I don't carry all my ammo with me. I might carry one specific thing. I'm not carrying $100 million worth of Bitcoin around.
Well, that is a good message. Yeah. Because when you think about it, people always talk about those wrench attacks and people attacking people. No, like, I'm going to torture you till I get your seed phrase. So it's like, well, you can't get it. So I don't have it there. So, you know, so there's just different ways that you can go about it. So it's nice that you can, it's just like somebody isn't going to come around down the street and torture you to get your bank login info. You know what I mean? It's like the same exact thing as having it on another entity like that. You'd rather support a company that's not the traditional, you know, finance world. Like, at least they fought the SEC and, you know, people like Coinbase. And Brian Armstrong stands up and goes to Washington to fight for rights. He's doing a good job, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we need that. I mean, we do. We need policy and regulatory procedures. You need policy. Like, I would encourage Bitcoiners to, you know, if you own $500 worth of Bitcoin, probably do nothing. But if you own 5,000, peel off $50 and give it to a lobbyist, man. Like I do this kind of stuff. Why am I doing it? I'm insuring my investment. Like, this is just part of
right?
It is. And I like the Dennis Porters. I like the Coinbases of the world, all the Perry Ann Weekles. I like all these people doing their deal. We're an army. Okay. Yeah. And we're like all moving in the same direction. That is very, very healthy. Uh-huh. That's what makes this such a safe entry point here, because we didn't have any of this 4 years ago.
Right.
None of this was here 4 years.
And like you said, Bitcoin is for your friends, your enemies, your everyone in this Bitcoin world, whether it's a total anarchist or whether it's a more political corporate, you know, entity type. Like, there's so many different types of us, you know, so it's like we are an army and it comes from every different part of the spectrum in Bitcoin. So it's like that's what makes us so complete and so powerful. Everyone plays their role, you know, to make this thing global, you know, and for everybody. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I would love to have you back again if you'd want to join me again. We had such a great talk. I feel like I always have notes that I want to go over with people, and we just end up talking about however the conversation goes, which I love. I think that's so great. And but I feel like we could talk about so much more. So if you ever want to join me again, I'd love that. So thank you again.
Thank you, Stacey. Appreciate it. It's been an interesting conversation. Every time I have one of these, you know, it's a way of formulating, hey, do I really believe this? You know, does this make sense? And it's really healthy to challenge yourself. Look, I would just end this way. If you have an enemy and they're collecting Bitcoin, you have a very dangerous enemy.
That's great. Thank you so much for that. That's a great quote.
Yes, ma'am.
I will look forward to sharing this. Thank you again for joining me. Thank you for your time. And I look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Stacey. Appreciate it.
Take care, Gary. Have a good day.